following message is from New Life Gillette series, God Friended Me. This week, Pastor Mike presents part one of this series.
So let me say welcome to those of you who are watching online, to the guys over at the prison, and to those of you who are here in the room. I have a question for you. Who's your best friend? Okay, you went spiritual. Some people said Jesus. You went spiritual on me. That's true. But we're going more physical today. Who is your best friend? And I don't mean the person in your life who you're closest to. I don't even mean the person in your life who you spend the most time with. Of your friends, who's the best at it? Like, who's a really good friend? I don't mean who are you around most. Because once you've come up with that person, then you'll start to see a trend. So think in your mind, who's my best friend? And then ask yourself, what does my best friend do that makes him or her a good friend? Why are they the best at being a good friend? And I, if you don't know what makes a good friend, then you don't know which friendships to invest in. You don't recognize them when they come around. And that's an important skill for you to be able to know what kind of friends are the best friends, because you don't have time to invest in every relationship. It's just not physically possible. There are way more people you want to be friends with than people that you have time to be friends with. Some relationships are worth investing in and others are not. And that sounds harsh, but if you try to invest in every relationship, you won't be a good friend to anyone. This is just a mathematical reality. If you try to invest in every relationship you want to invest in, you won't be a good friend to anyone. So, what do? Well, we invest in valuable relationships. And this sounds selfish, but it's a reality. The idea of this series came when I saw too many New Lifers investing in relationships that just seem to have no fruit. It's like no matter how much they do, how much they invest in this relationship, it just doesn't seem to benefit anyone. And I'm not saying that you should use people. I'm not saying that you should be in relationships with people just so that you can get something out of it and never give anything to it. In fact, I'm saying quite the opposite. Because sometimes relationships are valuable to both people, and in this case, it's worth investing in that relationship because it's a valuable relationship. But this is a friendship, and this is mostly what we're going to talk about in this series. But there's also another kind of relationship that you should invest in, another kind of relationship that is valuable. Those relationships are valuable to them. That's not a friendship. This is a mentorship. It's why you can't be a friend to your young child. If you try to be a friend to your young child, that's not a mentorship. You can't get them confused. You have to know when it's one or the other. If you are trying to be a friend to your young child, that's actually very selfish. Because what you're saying is, I intend to get something out of this relationship. Now, it's possible you will get something out of your relationship with your young child. But if you treat the relationship as if it is for you, then you're not going to be the best mentor you can be. So you should know if the relationship is valuable because it's a mentorship or because it's a friendship. Are you their friend or are you their mentor? Because we invest in some relationships to give life away. That's a mentorship. But we invest in other relationships because they are life giving. Because we can't live life well without good relationships. If you try, you will be lonely, you will be depressed, you will start to develop weird habits, you will start to develop weird thoughts. You need good relationships because they keep you on track. If you ever watch the TV show Alone, you know that we cannot live in isolation. Even if you are an introvert, you cannot live in isolation. Even introverts, even extreme introverts, need valuable relationships. So we should know what relationships are worth mentoring or investing in and which ones are not. And then we should. Is that mind-boggling? That blows my mind. God, how is God a friend to his followers? It's a similar thought to the fact that when a child becomes an adult, that adult child can become a friend to his parent or her parent. Even though at a younger stage it was a mentorship relationship and it was valuable because it was a mentorship relationship, the mentorship relationship can eventually become a friendship if the mentorship is done well. And don't you think if Jesus is a mentor, then he can do it well enough that the relationship can evolve into a friendship? Because a mature mentorship becomes a friendship. So let's know, why are we investing in our relationships? When Darcy and I had our first child, something we did not expect happened. Our capacity to invest in relationships outside of the house drastically declined. Because before we had kids, and we did a long time on the infertility thing, so we had gotten into this habit of we had all the time in the world to invest in relationships. In fact, we didn't even value the time so much. We squandered away. We had habits and routines in our lives that just took away from our relationship building time. Now that we have less relationship building time, we cherish it. We value it. We invest it well. Because before we had kids, sure, 9 o'clock game night over at the friend's house, that's great. Then routine happened because kids happened. Now, the only way we're having 9 o'clock game night is if we give up some sleep time, and you come over to our house, you can't have kids either, and you come over to our house and we play some games. That didn't happen very often because all our friends started having kids too, and so our ability to build relationships was decreased to a few hours in the day when we really sacrificed to make sure that those relationships were possible. This is why for us, one of the reasons why life groups are an irreplaceable part of our lives. Unbelievably valuable time in our lives. It's one of the few times when relationships are built best, and we're doing so with people who are worth building relationships with, building friendships with. Life groups are amazing. If you're not in a life group, I promise you, you're missing out. Because we were created for friendships, so much so that God came to earth to show us how they are done best. So then we thought to ourselves, because we don't have as much time to invest in relationships, we need to get picky. We need to figure out how to choose which relationships we should invest in and which relationships we should not invest in. So here's what we did. We came up with a list. What do our best friends, the people who are our friends and they're best at it, what do they do that makes them best friends? And this is the list we came up with. Well, they're fun. Like, we enjoy being together. We experience joy as a result of our friendship. Our best friends are loyal. They're not gossiping behind our back, and they don't talk to their other friends about how it annoys them that I talk with my mouth full of food or something. We're loyal. The best friends are trusting. This comes into play in both romantic best friendships and non-romantic best friendships, but most often in romantic best friendships. I trust you. If you tell me you're going to do something, I believe it. If you say you're going to show up at this place on this time, I believe it. And I'm going to trust you relentlessly, like even when you didn't one time. And we'll talk about forgiveness in a minute. Supportive. We support each other in hard times. If you're struggling, I don't care if that means I have to push bedtime back an hour. I'm going to be there for you. They communicate well and early. Not I let it fester because it frustrated me. I'm going to get it out there. If something you're doing is frustrating me, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk it out because our friendship is worth investing in. They hold each other accountable, and they're transparent to each other about what we need to be held accountable for. I tell you what I struggle with so you can hold me accountable to help me grow. We're available to each other. This is presence. This is I'm not texting the entire time we're at dinner together. This is similar to supportive. But it's more an issue of, are you really here? Like, are we really together? And then when you need me, I'll be there for you. We're generous to each other. We're not arguing about who's going to cover the tab at dinner. Because our first thought is, what can I give away, not what can I get? The best friendships are forgiving. Because the reality is, we're going to screw up on some of these things. Every one of us are not going to be good at one of these things or many of these things. This one ends more relationships, more friendships, because we refuse to forgive for shortcomings in these other areas. And if you're married, I pray that this is a description of your marriage. Sadly, too often it's not the case. The good news is that if this is not available in your home, it can be available outside your home. Join a life group. You can find this. If you found that you're lonely in life and you feel like, I can't find these people, don't stop searching. Get in a life group, and if you're not finding anything in your life group, join another life group. Switch life groups. Keep switching life groups because they're out there. Go look. Maybe you're not very good at looking, but don't stop. And you don't have to have all these things to be a good friend. But when you get a really good friend, you'll start to see a lot of these things come to the surface. When you get a really good friend, you'll start to see a lot of these things. And when you find it, invest in that relationship. Generosity, generosity, generosity. Give, give, give to that relationship because it's worth investing in. Watch this.
It was an extraordinary end to a hard-fought game. But it was this extraordinary moment that has people still cheering in St. Paul and beyond. Pitcher Ty Cain had just struck out the final batter, sending his team to the state tournament. But before rushing to join the celebration, he ran to home plate to console his good friend, Jack Kokin.
Being that last out, it was really rough. And to have Ty come up to me after the game, that was huge for me because, you know, I need someone who's there for me, and Ty was the guy.
Everyone knows how it feels to be in that situation, so I felt like I needed to go up to him and say something, and just was spontaneous and felt like the right thing to do.
The two grew up playing ball together.
When we were about 13 or 14 years old, we were on a traveling baseball team, and that's where we got pretty close, and we wanted to keep in touch ever since then.
They learned how to win and lose and always put friendship first.
20 years from now, I'll think back to that game. I will not remember the score at all, but I remember what tied it for me, and that's really all that matters.
That spontaneous hug was the best play of the game, a home run in sportsmanship.
Do you know why it's so powerful when in this life we see a good friendship? When we see those characteristics in a relationship? I get a little bit over spiritual in this conversation when I think that it's because it reflects a good relationship with God. If you have a really good relationship with God, it's going to start looking a lot, as it matures, it's going to start looking a lot like your best relationship with your best friend. Now, when you start off in your relationship with God, it's going to be more of a mentorship. But eventually, it's going to mature, and it's going to grow, and it's going to have these characteristics that we talked about are in the best of friendships. And when that happens, it's a powerful, powerful connection. We're starting a new series today called God Friended Me. It's an unbelievable, crazy thought to think that the God of the universe, the creator of all things, wants to be our friend. And in this series, we're actually going to pick three of these topics to focus on. Next week, we're going to talk about availability. Not only is God available to us, but God's availability to us should teach us how to be available to our friends. In week three, we're going to talk about transparency. We're going to talk about how we should be transparent with our friends because Jesus Christ was so transparent with us, came here to this earth, died naked on a cross. In week four, we're going to talk about forgiveness and how this kind of holds it all together and how God forgiving us time and time again should teach us how to forgive each other. You see, not long before Jesus died so that he could forgive us, he was talking to some of his followers, some of his disciples, and he was talking to them about how important it is for us to stay connected to him, and then he would tell us in his great love commandment that we stay connected to each other. This idea of connected, if you're connected to him, you will be connected to each other. And he's using a metaphor to teach this. And he's talking about how a branch must stay connected to the vine, or depending on the translation, a branch must stay connected to the tree. And then he says, and I have taught you these things, this idea of staying connected. I've taught you in the importance of staying connected so that you will be filled with joy. Without relationship, without connection, you cannot have joy. And remember that up to this time, Jesus is, to the disciples, their rabbi. He's their teacher. They don't think of him so much as a friend, but as a leader or a mentor or even as a master. And Jesus told them that you should stay connected so that your joy will overflow if you stay connected. He's saying, everything I'm telling you is so that your life will be what I want it to be, so that your life will be fulfilled, so that your life will be happy. But if you really want to be happy, learn to stay connected to each other and learn to stay connected to me. And then he says, and this is how you do it. This is my commandment. To stay connected, love each other. How? In the same way that I have loved you. It is amazing to me that at this big library of books we call the Bible, Jesus uses a singular word here. This is my commandment. Singular. Jesus' command is one command. It's to love. Because all the other ones just kind of play that love thing out. So what does it mean to live in relationship with God and live in relationship with each other? We just say love. If we talk about love here at New Life, which somebody told me we talk about love too much, I'm sorry. That's just kind of the whole point of everything. We should be lovers, which means we should be best, the best of friends. Like, nobody should be as good of friends as Christians. If we're doing what Christ taught us to do, nobody should be better at being friends than Christians. Let's be really great friends. And then Jesus says, if you want to know how to do that, follow my example. Because he says, there's no greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This is coming from a guy who is about to die for them. And he keeps telling them over and over again, I'm going to die and I'm going to raise from the dead. And it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other, and they don't really grasp what he's saying. He's like, listen, guys, I'm going to die because I need to show the world what love looks like. Because I am the best friend the world has ever seen. Friend? God? And he says, you are my friends. You are my friends. God telling, this is the mentor telling the mentee, you are my friends. He's making a statement about the maturity of their relationship. You are my friends if you do what I command. Now, this word frustrates me because of the way we usually use the word if in the English language. So, does it look to you like God is putting a condition on who can be his friend and who cannot? So let's look deeper into this word, if. You are my friends if you do what I command. Well, if you think about it, there are actually two different ways we use the word if in the English language. The first is in a conditional way. This is a conditional statement. And it says, if A happens, then after A happens, then B will happen. Example, if you take an aspirin, your headache will go away. If A happens, B will happen. If you eat too many ho-hos, bonbons, Twinkies, Nutter Butters, those are amazing, then you will get fat. If you cheer for the Broncos, you will lose. Sorry. It's a conditional statement. And I'm preaching right now, so it's truth. But there's a second kind of if that we don't use as often, but if you think about it, we do use it. And this is the if as an evidence statement. If A happens, then B must have already happened. If I'm saying that this is happening, then I'm telling you that it's evidence that something else already happened. Example, if your white blood cell count is low, then that is evidence that you're in remission, right? If the grass is green, it's evidence that what? It's been watered, or there's some kind of seed thing happening, or there's a sun in the sky. If A happened, then it's evidence that B happened. If the Broncos fired their coach, it's evidence that... I'll let you fill in the blank. So the if in verse 14 is an evidence statement. This is my command, that you love each other. Okay, so we need an evidence statement to say that if you're my friend, it's evidence that something else happened, right? It's not so much that if you do what I command, then I'll allow you to be my friend. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you're my friend, it is evidence that you do what I command. And what does he command? It's singular. Love. If you're my friend, it's evidence that you loved, because relationships are a two-way street. This is the whole conversation we're having. If you are in a friendship, not in a relationship, if you are in a friendship, then both people are loving. Then both people are giving. So Jesus is saying that the love is evidence that we've moved past mentorship and we've arrived at friendship, because you love me. And if you love me, you love each other. Jesus is talking about maturing relationships to the point to which, if you love, you're my friend. This is almost like a statement about free will. He's kind of like saying, if you want to be my friend, you can be my friend, but it's got to be two ways. Like, we both have to be giving to this relationship in order for it to become a friendship. Otherwise, it's at a less mature stage. Have you ever tried to invest in a relationship that you just felt like you were giving to and giving to and giving to, and it had no fruit? How frustrating is that? Whether it's a friendship relationship or a mentorship relationship, it's just like, I'm pouring into this relationship and nothing is coming of it. He's not getting anything out of it, she's not getting anything out of it, and I'm not getting anything out of it. So what are we doing? Do you ever think that maybe God feels that way all the time? Like, God's like, I'm here. I'm ready to invest in you. I came to earth to die for you so that we could have a relationship. Like, hello? When are you going to engage? When is this relationship going to bear fruit? Because in a servant relationship, in a servant-master relationship, you can force something to happen. You can force the relationship. A master can force his servant to do something, right? That's a forced relationship. And God is saying, I want something more than that. I want to take the next step in our relationship. If you love me, we can create something entirely new. And you can be friends with God. In other words, this whole thing is Jesus saying, friendships are reciprocal. They're a two-way street. Otherwise, there's something less. If a friendship is not reciprocal, then it's charity. Or even worse, it's just a total waste of time. It could be a mentorship, and that's valuable, but it's not a friendship. Because friendships go both ways. There is love being given, and there's love being received. Then Jesus says something to his disciples that probably made their jaw drop. In verse 15, he says, I no longer call you slaves. And we think of the word slaves differently than he meant it. This is more an implication of an employee-employer relationship. I never think of you as my employees or as my pupils or as my students. I no longer think of you as slaves, or call you slaves, because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Jesus just made his relationship with his disciples reciprocal. Jesus is confiding. In other words, he's getting something out of his relationship with his disciples. This is amazing, because Jesus limited himself. Jesus is telling them now, you're more than just my students. Now you are also fellow teachers. Now you're my partners. In another place, it blows my mind, Jesus called us his body. That may sound blasphemous, because you think, no, Jesus had everything he needed. Jesus couldn't have a friendship because that's a give-take thing. But Jesus says, I'm relying on my disciples, on the people who were my slaves. Now there's a give-take thing going on because Jesus limited himself and Jesus went to the Father and had to go to the Father for help. He had to go to the Father for information because he limited himself. And then he did this amazing thing where he said, and now I'm going to pass it on to you. Relationship with God is a crazy thing. In the beginning of this message, I asked you who your best friend is. You're never going to find anybody who is as good as a friend as Jesus is to you. It's not possible. Because I gave you the list of what a good friend looks like, and none of us are good at all of them. Sometimes I think my wife gets really close. Like, my wife is a really good friend. That list is a very good description of her, but she even falls short, obviously. And because she's such a good friend, my standards for what a good friend looks like have gotten really high. I've gotten really picky. That doesn't mean I'm not willing to mentor. That doesn't mean I'm not a great friend, but I want really great friends. And I've started to learn from her over time, and I've started to learn from other relationships that I've had in my lives. And if that is you, if you are in the place where you want to be where I am, where you have friends that are better friends than you are, join a life group. You're not going to find it anywhere else more easily than you can find it in a life group. There's a lot of you who are sitting in this room who sometimes talk about being lonely, who sometimes talk about how you don't have any good friends, and you're not in a life group. And my mind is just blown. I just think, how could you possibly talk about friendships being valuable to you and not take the very step that could solve your problem most easily? Join a life group. And if you're in a life group where that's not being offered, if you're in a life group where you're not finding that, change life groups. We never made anybody sign a piece of paper saying they would never try and change life groups. In fact, we beg you to change life groups if you're not finding this in your life group. Signups are coming. Go have a conversation with Ellie. Go have a conversation with Jen. In fact, the great best life groups are started by people sitting in the room right now who sat there one day thinking, you know what? I've got a few friends that are like you're describing. I think we should get together and start a life group. I think we should be intentional about our relationships with each other. I think we should be intentional about transparency and learning together and growing together. That's a lot of people in this room. And you're thinking you don't have time, but the only reason I have good friendships is because I'm in a life group, because my life would get away from me. After first service, somebody came up to me and said, I'm feeling really guilty. I don't feel like I have any friends. If you get to that place, you're going to be really miserable. Get in a life group. There's double negative on there. You have to be in a life group if you want to be good friends with somebody. I have another one of these friends besides my wife, and it's Paul. By the way, it's Paul's birthday. Big 7-0. Maybe not quite. First time I ever talked to Paul, it was on the phone. And it was because at the time, my brother Billy was the lead pastor here, and I had Paul's job, and I wasn't very good at it. And we decided that because Billy and I have like the same personality types, the same skill sets, he's just a little better at some stuff. We decided we need to balance here. We need a third person on our team who's got some other skills. And so we decided that we were going to look for this person. And we got a bunch of applications, and we got a lot of people with the same personality and skill sets we had until we got Paul's application. And Paul's application blew me away. Like, I felt like Paul knew our church better than I knew our church when he sent in his application. And so I called Paul and I said, We had our first conversation. It was a pretty long conversation because we kind of hit it off and we got to know each other a little bit over the phone. Well, then I found out again that my brother is a complete jerk. And soon after this conversation, Billy resigned from his job as the lead pastor here. And so I called Paul up on the phone and I told him, I said, I know you were applying to work for my brother. How do you feel about not working for my brother, but still working here? We don't have a pastor right now, and I'm going to apply for the job. And Paul said, okay, I'll stick around and see how it works, how that goes. And to say that the next couple weeks were rocky would be an understatement. Because, let's be honest, there were a lot of you here who did not think that I should be the next lead pastor of New Life. I can't imagine why. I mean, we took a vote on it, and I know there were a lot of people that didn't think I should be the next lead pastor. In fact, it was about 25% of you that didn't think I should be the next lead pastor of New Life. Oh, really? Well,
I think that's a strength.
Strength. Go Chiefs. But after some conversations, we started to move forward in this whole process, and we kept talking to Paul. And the whole time, there's some holdouts, and people were like, okay, he's 32 years old. He has zero lead pastor experience. He has spent his last 6 years here canceling a bunch of ministries that we love. He got rid of the pews. I can't imagine why you guys didn't want me to be your pastor. But so we go through this process, and Paul had already booked his tickets to be out to come out here and meet us and interview for the job. And I told Paul, I was like, well, I'm actually interviewing for a job, and if I get it, then I'll hire you, but I can't really promise you anything, but he's coming out here. So I was like, how about you just sit in on the interviews while I interview for the job? And so Paul sits in on these interviews, and the conversation is happening, and some of them were with the board, some of them were with other groups and all this stuff, and there's a lot of people that have some say in this conversation. And we were in a couple of these meetings that they just weren't going too great. And Paul, who's supposed to be a fly on the wall not saying anything, finally in the middle of this meeting just speaks up. And Paul's like, all of a sudden comes out of nowhere and starts like becoming Mike cheerleader. Like, no, let me give you a bunch of reasons why Mike should take this job and why he does have potential even though he sucks at this and has no experience at this. And he starts like... Paul, who I just, like, I walk up to Paul, I'm like, hey, Paul, good to meet you. We're about to step into an interview. You can just sit in and listen. And Paul turns into, like, fight for Mike guy. And Paul is probably the primary reason why I ended up getting this job. It's because, like, okay, at least he'll have a 70-year-old that'll help him. Or something like that. But there were a lot of people who stood by me there and a lot of people who asked really good questions and recognized that I wasn't ready, and I wasn't ready. We had a year of pretty rocky stuff around here because I wasn't ready, but I feel like I'm growing, I'm learning, I'm trying to do better. But I learned something in that process. The person that Paul was in those meetings when he was standing up for me was not because he wanted a job. It's because that's who Paul is. And I've gotten to know him over the past few years, and I've started to learn that Paul's just a loyal guy. He's just the type of guy who's going to jump in and argue for somebody, who's going to try to give grace where it doesn't really seem logical to give grace, who's going to stand up for people. And I started to learn that this is a relationship that I know I'm losing my capacity to invest in relationship, but this one's worth investing in. And so as a result, there are things that I've told Paul that I will never tell any of you. There are things that Paul knows about me that I've only told him because I totally trust that they're never going to get out. Transparency. And we have this like way of being generous to each other, and he's way better at it than I am, and being transparent with each other and being there for each other. And having that in my life, especially at a time when my brother moved away and we've kind of been together our whole lives, was so unbelievably valuable. I cannot tell you how important that has been in my life over the past few years. And if you're in the place where you just kind of feel like, I want that, I know God's called me to that. I know I have a desire for that. That's because he put the desire in your heart. Then let me tell you, it's worth investing in. It's worth fighting for. It's worth looking for. Get in a life group. Go find it. Don't sit on the sidelines expecting it to come to you. Invest in those relationships. There's nothing more valuable you can do. There's many of us in this room who recognized that a friendship with Christ was worth working for, was worth investing in. And when we did that, we discovered that actually a spiritual friendship can do more than a physical friendship can do. If you haven't experienced it, I can't really tell you about it. You just got to experience it. But then Jesus took it the next step and he said, but that's not even enough. You need that spiritual relationship with me, but if you really want to be who I created you to be, you also have to have these social relationships, these horizontal relationships. And this is the story of the gospel. This is the one command, that we stay connected, that we love each other, that we invest in each other, so that when we go through hard times, so that when we're laid off, so that when we're struggling financially, so that when we lose a loved one, we're not alone. God, today I thank you for how you have worked through so many of our friends and our family to be there for us when we needed them most. Would you give us the courage to be that for other people as well? Develop within our group, within our midst, some friendships that are lifelong, unbreakable bonds in which we invest in each other, in which we are generous with each other, transparent with each other, loving to one another like you were loving to us. Help us to learn to lay our lives down like you laid your life down for us. Make us more like you, who we were created to be. We love you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to New Life Gillette. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newlifegillette.com. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And always remember, Jesus loves you very much, and he died to give you new life.